go to James. James chapter 1. I got in a huge argument last night with certain personnel from ABC about whether or not debt meant trespass, and trespass meant debt, and what did Jesus mean when he said, forgive us our debts? And in her mind, she could not conceive of a debt that Christ could deal with. In other words, if you got yourself in debt, then you have to get yourself out of debt. You have to work hard. The essence of her belief system is that God helps those that help themselves. And she's lucky because she is bright. She's an attorney. She is successful. Her husband is very successful. And so for her, the idea of debt is, you know, it's just something that stupid people get into. And unfortunately, that's the view of the world. When I was being questioned the last time in the deposition, just before I became a believer, my life fell apart. And they were all, I just forgot about, I didn't even deal with life. And so they pulled out all of these ancient things from the 60s, late 60s that said, well, didn't you owe E.M. Can money, or didn't you owe this doctor money and you didn't pay him? I forgot about it. Because in that period of my life, everything had fallen apart. And so if I didn't know that he had forgiven all debt, then, I mean, I'd have to spend the rest of my life trying to figure out who I had offended.
And you'd go to hell if you forgot one.
And if I forgot one, yeah, then I couldn't, you know. But if Christ forgave all our debt, it has to be all or nothing. And it's not just financial debt. It's all of the debt of obligation, of responsibility, of performing, of doing. And I hope that somehow that communicates. There are some of you that have been here a long time that still are locked into that your identity has something to do with what you do, how you perform. That somehow your value to God or to the body or to the world is based on how well you do something or whether you do something or not. And that's a lie. And it's a critical lie that you've got to see. Otherwise, when you fail, you will have nowhere to go except self-condemnation. And so the primary area that each of us have in debt is the doing. We've got to do this. We've got to do that to meet what our parents expect of us, what our relatives expect of us, what we expect of ourselves, what our spouse expects of us. How can we meet all those obligations? How can you do it? How can you meet your image of yourself?
Today when you called me, you started asking me about, did we have this, did we have that? I mean, obviously, you know, I immediately started to head out the door into defensiveness and all that. And about 10 minutes later, it's like I realized, like when I went into that place, it's like what you were asking me was a threat, was an imposition, it was all these things. And about 10 minutes after we talked, I realized that it's like I'm doing exactly what I want to do. I love what I do. And it sounds strange, but it's like it's an awful. I'm honored to do what I do.
Okay, Barbara, where are you? Write that down.
Hey, we got our recorder going.
But in that panic of trying to save myself, that goes right out the window. But I calmed down and I thought, you fool. what he asked you, I mean, he didn't call somebody else to ask that.
Well, think how much we rob ourselves of the joy of the moment because of what we have imagined ourselves that we should be. I mean, that's why Christ said, you must become as that little child, a darling infant without self-awareness, that you might totally enjoy and be at peace in each moment. And you can only do that if you're without debt. Do you understand what, I mean, and the biggest one, obviously the one that you think is the biggest is parental debt, because you blame everything on your parents and your way you were raised and all of those issues. But really the biggest one is your self-image debt. What have you defined yourself as? What definition is the thing that keeps you in prison? I mean, I was in prison for most of my life because of a self-image debt.
Why do you have that definition now? I mean, isn't it sometimes the way you saw your parents?
Yeah, or sometimes it was, as we've talked before, it was the thing that whatever your parents wasn't. Yeah. It was the opposite of what your parents were. But anyway, the issue is, and all of these debts require you to do something. You got to do something about it. I got to do this. I got to do that. James chapter 1, verse 22. This is one of the most mispreached words or scriptures in the Bible. They just use this one verse. It says, be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. Well, if you stop there, it means I got to go do a bunch of stuff, right? I got to go save the world and make vows of faith and heal everybody. And be ye a doer of the word. Save everybody. But read on. For if any man be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. In other words, he looks in a mirror. For he beholdeth himself, and he goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. In other words, he looks into the Bible, and all he sees is himself. And he's got a plan. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But he looks in and all he sees is himself. Do you ever notice about you, and maybe, you know, I'm sure you guys don't do this, but you hear Harry would never do this. You hear the revelation of God. You hear the peace of God that passes understanding and you're at peace. And 5 minutes later, 5 seconds later, you've already dug the hole, dug the pit, and buried yourself. You've forgotten everything. So you were like a man beholding his natural face in a glass, and straight away he forgets what manner of man he was. Does anybody else know what I mean? I mean, it means silly. We know that peace is our inheritance. We know that joy is the rightful possession with no effort on our part. We know that we can be at rest in every situation. And what happens? We forget. Because we've beheld our natural face in the glass. We've looked into the Bible and saw only ourselves. We've said, what does this mean to me? Instantly we forget. Now it says, it defines... And so what we do then, when we forget, we think we have something to do, right? The thing that drives Harry up a tree is if I call him unexpectedly and ask him to do something. I interrupt his agenda. Boom. He's off to the races. But listen. But whosoever looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. In other words, if you look into the scripture and see only the perfect law of liberty, which is Christ, that's what you see. And as you see him, you shall be like him, for you shall see him as he is. You shall be like him in nature. You shall be like him in the way you respond to stimuli. Not by any religious memorization, not by hiding words in your heart, not by practicing being a Christian, not by going to seminars, but by looking and seeing him. And that's all there is to do. Well, that's easy for you to say, Ole, you don't have a family. You don't have any kids. If I did that, I'd just sit around all day. Didn't do anything. Well, then you're saying you don't believe in God. You're saying that he isn't sufficient to activate you in that moment of whatever is needed. But can you see? Just by the act of looking at him, you become the doer of the word. If you hear the word as something to do, then you've seen your own face. And you're in debt to all of the images that you have of yourself. And it's critical. It's absolutely critical. You see that the debt must be discarded, forgiven, forgotten. The debt of the image that you have of yourself. What image do you have of yourself? Anybody got one? What's the core image that you have of yourself? Come on, somebody.
Responsible.
Responsible.
Nice.
Nice and responsible. Anybody else have one? What's Harry's core image? What is your core image?
Lazy, stupid, irresponsible.
So that what? So you have to do something about it.
No, that's not there.
You have to prove it isn't there, right? What's your self-image?
Successful.
Successful.
Make it happen.
In charge.
Be a go-getter.
In charge.
Can't make it happen. Jack squat.
Anybody else got a core image of themselves? What's your core image, Mr. Lewis?
Hungry.
Pork chop!
Be good, do it right.
Be good. Yeah. Primarily be good, right?
Probably.
Well, not... It's not just looks. It's how things look. Yes, yeah, not just how things appear. Yeah. See, listen, you want to hear something? Okay. It may be the greatest story or the greatest thing that you've ever heard. Some people's concern are the words. Harry's concern is how it looks.
Is it a clean print yet?
Is it a clean print?
Can you see the other page through it? So when I
Xerox it. Can you understand that you don't have to condemn yourself for any core image that you have? Because God will transform it to be perfect. You don't have to consider anything about you as negative. Because God will transform it as a part of the mystery to make you perfect.
We went to a thing at SMU last night to honor distinguished alumni, which was needed for other reasons. But that was the thing that struck me most. All these people, these are the richest in Dallas and the most successful in Dallas, and yet it came down to that. You're given whatever you're given, and it's what you do. What they did with what they had was one thing, but the way they responded with what hit them was what was the real important thing that came out. I mean,
what happens to you is not nearly as important as how you respond to it.
Yeah, and that was neat to hear that in the middle of all this crazy.
Okay, anybody else have something, core image you want to... We're going to get into this in great detail, as I hope you're aware of, and so you're not going to get by with being silent, so... Huh?
Or
eight? Oh, yeah, that's not, yeah, right.
Well, you know, I've been working on this, you know, for a long time, but what I found, you know, is that I'm generally fearful, and more than that, I mean, under that is a terrible fear of abandonment that goes on with me that just, you know.
Tell them about the one or two times that you decided to quit up there, and quit the foundation, quit being a Levi, and why you...
Oh, I mean, just plain, I felt abandoned. I mean, I felt detached. I felt as though I'd just been cut off and you know, like, I was in space and my umbilical ripped and it was just gone.
See, that's the one, that fear of being not connected, of fear of being abandoned, is the instrument by which Satan has deceived the whole world. And in order to avoid that position of being abandoned, that's why we go into debt. We do everything and anything to keep us from the feeling that we are going to be alone and abandoned. We make up things about ourselves. We lie, we cheat, we steal, to do anything to keep from that feeling of being abandoned. And even no matter how successful you are in the world, no matter what you've achieved, that's the core program. I was waiting for some of you to, when I kept asking for core, what is your core program? The core program of every man that has ever lived is fear of abandonment.
It makes sense to me now why it seems so hard to abandon yourself.
Yeah.
When you say that, because you got this other thing coming at you.
Right. If you,
if I abandon myself, then what's going to happen?
Right.
I'm going to really be alone.
If I abandon myself, I will be alone, forgotten, forever.
It's real
universal, and how that fear that you just described comes out in each of us, it comes out in a different format.
It gets difficult to see through when I think that it's something outward to me,
yeah,
and not something that I have decided that, you know, that I'm worth it, so that I buy into the idea that it's possible I'm not worthy to exist. You know, versus somebody, there's like a weight on me that somebody has decided. I feel like somebody already decided that I'm not worthy to exist, so I just have that debt already. Like a national debt.
But that's
kids that are born already owe all this money, and then, you know, they don't have shit to do with it, but, you know.
That's a perfect picture of why. I mean, what is it? Every child that's born into the world now at this today owns what? $40,000 before they take their first breath to pay off the national debt.
When you said the fear of being left alone flashed on, it was like a full-blown experience of that. So I must have thought of this before or something, but I flashed on being alone in a cheap hotel in Manhattan. With no friends, no family, you know, nobody to call for help, just alone in Manhattan, the poor, you know, cold water walk up or something, just surrounded by a hostile world and no place to go for help.
I just remember something that I had never remembered before. Remember I told you I used to run away all the time, starting when I was 3 and 4 years old? The reason I did it was because another earlier experience had happened that made me believe that my parents had left me. And so then I was going to do it first, so I would never... I was going to be the instigator, so I wouldn't have to hurt. Because then I could con myself and say I ran away, instead of I wasn't worthy and they left me. God, I haven't remembered that before.
Yeah, I can. And you say that.
Because my response to it was to become macho, which is the stupidest lie there is. Can you see though how all of our core debt, all of the things that we do to protect ourselves, come from those first feelings of fear of being abandoned? And we create worlds, we create situations, we create personalities to keep us from facing that. Now, we now know the mystery is if we can admit it, if we can see it in us, then it knits us together in love. So there's no more any. Hopefully, there's getting less and less fear of talking about those issues. Each of us have a sign, a persona that comes forth when we start feeling that we've been abandoned. We can't. There's something in us won't let us say, "I'm afraid," or we have to play all these other games. Because we have the debt to that. Even though we know better, the debt causes us to respond with the old tapes. That's why it's so critical that we see that the debt has been forgiven, and then we can forgive ourselves. And we don't have to play those tapes anymore. We can respond freely. And the way we respond freely primarily is to admit weakness. You know, it's hard to do. Especially with the image of that image of what that self-image. There's not one person in the room whose self-image includes admitting their weakness. They're vulnerable. There's not one person whose self-image is to be vulnerable.
It's like we're all playing
that. We're all playing this game.
Yeah, I was thinking it's like a hermit crabs. It's like my identity, or everybody's, I'm sure, is this thing that's. It's the shell, and the real me is just this little thing that just kind of puts my eyes out.
Yeah, but the real you is this thing, this being that's perfect, that's accepted, that's love, that's everything. I mean, that's the real you. It's this lie
right.
of the mind that has made us believe that we're being abandoned. And it doesn't matter, you know, this starts at the earliest age. I mean, we got to get down to that place so that we can each be free, and we got to help each other get to it. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Once we know we are forgiven, then we can forgive ourselves. Then we will automatically forgive others.
I think to a certain point, I have to intellectualize that because.
Yeah, but we don't have to go back to the same point, to the starting point, because the way our minds work, our minds always return to that point. So we just got to go back to the earliest one we remember.
Yeah, they're all the same.
They're all the same point.
So it's always reliving
the same reaction.
Yeah, you're just reliving that same initial fear of abandonment, and it all goes back to the same neuron. So you don't have to remember that. You just have to go back to one you do remember.
Allow myself to be totally in, if I'm feeling that.
To be vulnerable.
Let myself go ahead and see it and
right.
see it and not squash it too strong or to be whatever.
Right. And it's hard. There's no easy way to do that except to know that there's an environment in which you're loved without condition. Otherwise, you can't do it. You'll never let yourself be that vulnerable. That's why it's taken so many years to get to this kind of stuff.
Well, it feels like you have to swallow that whole debt. It's like you have to be it. You know you have to, consume it. And it just seems so huge that it's like trying to swallow it. Especially when the lump in your throat gets so big.
Well, that's why, that's the giant, the biggest giant in the land. And that's why Joshua and Caleb said, don't worry about the giants, they're our meat. They are all food. You just eat. Don't worry about what you can't chew. Just chew what you can chew. You know, I know. You know, just think of the heartache the world goes through. Forget the world. Just think of the heartache you've gone through by how you've responded to this fear instead of just with openness. Anybody else have any arena or questions about self-image debt? I mean, we could go through all of the, there's this area and this area. This, how you look, what you're supposed to do. Yeah, I don't want to do all that. I just want to get to the core and then.
It's
wild
to me to think that there's something that I can sit and think of things that the debt that I'm in, but when I'm actually in it and going, you just don't see it.
Mm-hmm. No, and you'll do anything when you've gone back to it, when you've gone back to that image of yourself. You'll do anything to keep from admitting you're vulnerable, weak, or you'll scream and yell and protest and.
You know, my image of what God is and what angels and heaven and all that are based on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, and it's the same kind of thing. If you incorporate that, at least I've incorporated that into my own
theology,
so that you know, all right, that's what I have to do there, and that's what I have to do there.
We think that our image of self and image of God stuff is rather innocent or rather innocuous. You know, if you've been taught that your goal in life was to be like a stupid little angel flying around heaven, I mean, that's kind of stupid. Well, a lot of Catholics do. But what happens is that the image of self versus image of God stuff can be so strong that will cause you to deny Christ. That's why Judas denied Christ, was a combination of his self-image versus what his image of God was. And when they didn't mesh and didn't meet, then he sold Christ out for his own redemption, his 30 pieces of silver. The question is, what would you sell God out for? What would you sell Christ out for? How, you know, we've gone through this many times, but Harry would sell him out for some clean towels. But what would you sell him out for? Would you sell him out for some point where you didn't feel good at that moment? Or this isn't what you think things should be like? Or, and that is why we say each time we do the communion, you know, in the same night in which was betrayed, because we just got through betraying every one of us. He took the bread and he broke it and blessed it. Because it's our self-image, the debt to that image, and the image of God that keeps us separate. So forgive us our debt as we forgive our debtors is critical to freedom. It's critical to knowing how to pray. If you had to say, just for sake of discussion, we won't pick anybody that isn't in this room. Who would you think in this room are the most in debt? Name one or two people.
Are you talking money or are you talking money?
Debt, period, whatever that means.
Me and Alan.
That's true. Paul, Harry, and Burnett are the three most in debt in this body. Can you see it? But what that also means is that's you. I mean, you shouldn't feel badly about it. Your function is to show the rest of us what debt is. In other words, it sanctifies that which you think of as negative. But you have to be honest. You have to say what's there. You mean, not try to hustle anybody. I mean, I can't see debt in me. I need your help. Am I communicating? Because it's only in that vulnerability, that's that weakness, that's when I'm strong, when I am weak. Because then we are knit together in love, and it's that weakness that is the strength of the love of God. It's not some image of strength and power and what you think love looks like or any of that horse shit. It's weakness. That's the strength of love. That's why it's always, it's faith which worketh by love. That's the mystery of God. Now, this costs you a bunch. I mean, eternally it costs you all of this image, this silver in your mind of what you think your redemption is. You know, it doesn't matter whether it doesn't matter whether the image is positive or negative. It's still the image of your own redemption. If you have a negative image of yourself, it doesn't make it any easier to be a believer than if you had a positive image of yourself. What God wants is no image, emptiness, that you might see Him. Now, when did you acquire most of your self-image debt? That's the next question. You acquired it when you were weak, so you wouldn't have to let anybody else know you were weak. You got it? That's when you sold out. You sold out when you were weak, so you wouldn't have to let anybody know you were weak. You sold out when you were afraid, so you wouldn't have to let anybody know you were afraid. So you created these images of yourself that you portray, and then slowly but surely you believe them. This is what I am. That's not what you are. That's what you made up. You invented yourself. You invented yourself to keep from showing weakness and to keep from being vulnerable. And every one of the inventions of yourself was a debt that you are constantly paying on that is bigger than any national debt you have ever heard of. That's why almost everyone in history that becomes a believer when they're a teenager. Because that is the point in which you are the weakest. That is a point in which you have sold out. You no longer adopt the value systems of your parents. You think they've sold out, and they have. You don't have an image of yourself yet, and society's trying to get you to get one. So you sell out as a teenager in order to keep from being weak. Can anybody remember a point when they sold out? One issue you sold out over? That's when you went in debt, when you were weak. And it's a lie. Do you understand? You've manufactured yourself. And you've gone into debt for the rest of your life for this self-image, which is an invention. Now, that's why it says, forgive us our debts, so that we might see. Give me an example. Anybody remember when you made a definition of yourself over any issue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My core image of myself is that I'm this tough, don't give a shit about anything or what anybody thinks. Yeah, just that, I was being squashed. I was being squashed by family. I was being squashed by friends. And so I determined that I was going to be tough. And in this strength, I could, be a heroine riding in on the horse, saving.
What's that? Okay, it's time for her.
And all that kind of stuff. Yes. Hey,
here I go. I'll save your mind.
But yeah, I remember thinking to myself, well, I can be just as happy. I don't need them. I can,
not going to let it hurt you.
Yeah.
Whatever they say, whatever they do, they're not going to hurt me.
That was the whole thing. They hurt me, and I don't like this. So the best way I knew to get out of it was to imagine myself tough.
Peg, put on a face.
I was in trouble all the time. But I mean, in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, it's changed totally. I was in trouble all the time, and it was constant war. And I would stand up in the classroom and yell at the teachers and stuff, and I didn't do my homework. And I remember just saying, "This is too much. This is crazy. Life will be easier if I stop doing this. I will make it look like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I will make it look like I am respecting my elders. I will make it look like I'm a good boy." And then all that stuff went away.
Yeah, but when did you buy into it? When did you forget it was a mask?
I started liking.
Because you got attaboys?
I think so, yeah. I started liking it. And,
both.
No, I don't think it was that. Because
your dad beat you.
Well, yeah, but this was seventh grade. You know what it was? It's
Girls.
Anybody else? Girls. Anybody else remember an issue?
I talked about this before, but about the time that part of punishment after I did my chores, I was supposed to kneel down in the family room on the tile, and I had to kneel down for like long, long periods of time, and I couldn't watch the TV set, and normal life would be going on. People would come in and out. I couldn't talk to anybody. Nobody could talk to me. I was kind of like just like a statue, and so I think I know I started to develop things like that. You know where I could.
What were you supposed to do?
Nothing. Just kneel there.
Just be humiliating. You're humiliating.
Yeah, I guess just, but not to show anything. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like one time. It was a thing that I just did. It got to where after I did my chores, I just went to kneel down. I never needed to be told. It was just something that I was supposed to do next. So.
Can you remember how you felt the first time?
Mm-hmm. No, all I know is it got to the point where crying doesn't mean anything. I felt that, didn't mean it.
Anybody else? Can you remember when you invented yourself? Let's go to Matthew.
I'm remembering. You asked me, when did you buy into it? Buy into it is just words. It's like, when did it become reality? That's sort of spooky. And I made up this thing and said, okay, this is what I'll be for Halloween. And then I never took the costume off, because I like the candy. It's sort of spooky. I went so far, such a deep coverage, and I forgot.
I remember thinking to myself, now don't forget who you really are. This is just pretend now and losing track. I remember that. Because it was like 3 or 4 days later, and I thought, I forgot. I couldn't remember. Then I started drawing graphs in my head about where I should be in that.
I knew you'd like that one. Yeah, there's more. These points, when we define ourselves, it's not just one point. It's several sort of seminal points that define that, for which each time we go more and more into debt. You know, most of you know that when I was 6 or 7, I had double pneumonia and whooping cough at the same time, and I couldn't. When that whooping cough, one of its symptoms is you can't control your bowel movement. And so my dad, who I thought I respected somewhat anyway, I mean, we'd be out, he'd make fun of me for having dumped in my pants. And the shame of that was so total that I redefined myself. You know, I supposedly won this award out at the airport, because I was in the airplane. We were taking the ABC pictures of the Tiltons' home and stuff. And I got sick, and I threw up, and I swallowed it. I mean, that was example. I mean, I redefined myself. No matter what the cost, I wasn't going to experience that shame. And that caused a huge debt that's uncalculable. And it caused hurt and harm to other people that's beyond comprehension.
I can remember, I guess I was about 6 years old, and we had to sell everything we owned to make payroll, and I mean, it was just really. That was at the same time when I was going through, when I was really sick, and I was going through these periods of months and months and months where I was totally deaf. But I mean, I I'm sure they're all interconnected, but what he just said, man, I guess, you know, looking at it, man, I made a vow, and I just wasn't going to be dependent on anybody for any money ever. Because it was just, I was really ashamed. I mean, I was ashamed of where we went from to where we ended up in like minutes, in my mind.
Yeah.
Well, and you just told the story with the airplane. Don't know me that. That's an example of what the flesh can do, the strength of the flesh. The flesh is such that it can keep itself from messing on itself or whatever. It can exert enough will to cause that to be. And it dawns on me that what we're talking about is the strength of the flesh. This is what keeps the flesh in gear. This is what keeps the flesh alive, is this debt thing. The flesh has got to be there on guard all the time.
Let me see if I can. There's a very immediate way that I can explain that, and hopefully that each of you can see it clearly. One of the issues that many of you have expressed is that you're afraid of me for whatever reason. And that, as you know, I hate that with everything in me. And it's my fault, because what I've done with the pain is I've swallowed the vomit and not let you know the pain. I haven't shared it because it didn't fit my image. And so that has robbed you of seeing the real me, and therefore it makes you think that I'm something that you should be afraid of. Especially like, you know.
Especially since we can't do it.
Right, since we can't aspire.
Well, it's not something that I even, it's a stupid debt that I made that I was not going, you know. So I buckle up and I don't feel pain. But, you know, the damage that's done to you, and to you, and Paul, it's incalculable.
Yeah. I joked about it. You remind me of my friend, Ron, who, I was 5'10", he was 6'3". I mean, I could run a mile in 7 minutes, he could run about a mile in 5 minutes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, yeah. I mean, in terms of strength of the flesh, I can't keep up with you. And when I see you do these things, like the way you handle pain, I mean, from the flesh, I admire that.
But can you see how
it's a highly esteemed among men thing. And I can't do that. When I get a cold, if I stub my toe, you know, if somebody yells at me, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but can you see from the perspective of God, what's highly esteemed among men is...
That's what I mean. You're right. Pal and Burnett and I, tonight in particular, we are luckier than you.
Yeah.
It hasn't seemed that way. But we are.
Amen.
What we're talking about, though, is that Jesus had a debt to be guard of. I mean, in that his debt was he was God.
His debt was that to control everything.
Yeah. I mean, what?
Yeah, we haven't come to that yet.
Sorry.
We'll get to that. To show you how your debt is paid. It's like, if I'm really hurting, I tell Barbara not to tell anybody. If I have to go lay down and take a knockout pill, Barbara's the only one that knows. She has to tell. She can't tell anybody.
Somehow, it has put me in a tough position.
But that's, but can you, that's the strength of the debt that I'm in. Can you, can everybody understand this? You don't have to be in debt. You can just be you, free, free as a bird. No thought about whether you're doing this or that, just be. But I have to be that too. But I have a right to be that. But my fear, or my selling out to that debt of, I'm sure it started, you know, back when I was 6 or 7 years old, has robbed you and made people here be afraid of me or think I'm something, which is just crazy. Okay, whatever the, let's read Matthew 18 real quick. Matthew 18, verse 21. Do you understand first that the debt, all of these debts, are debts, they're not just innocent debt. They're debts that we owe to the God of this world. You understand that? They're debts that we owe to the system, to the world, to the God of this world. When we talk about the self-image debt, well, we say, well, who do we owe them to? Therefore, I can be cavalier about it because I don't owe anybody. No, you owe them to the God of this world. Understand that? Everybody understand that? You don't owe them to yourself. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till 7 times? And Jesus said unto him, I say not unto thee until 7 times, but until 70 times 7. Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought... See, that's what I really just drives me up a tree, that people like Tilton teach you to go into more debt in the name of God. Do you understand? I'm talking about going into debt where Paul and Pete came from. They had to watch every moment. They were in debt to every moment because a demon might be there. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. And as we talked, a talent is 97 pounds.
$42 million.
Huh?
$42 million.
That's a whole bunch of money. It's more than that.
Silver.
Huh?
The price of silver.
You must have one of those, like, interesting study Bibles that has little numbers there.
Last night we read this.
All right. But forasmuch as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children and all that he had in payment be made. This parable won't make any sense until you recognize how much debt you're in to the God of this world. It won't be meaningful to you. Right? The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, Lord, have patience with me, and I'll pay thee all. Then the Lord of the servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave him the debt. That's what's happened. Your debt has been forgiven. But you don't know it yet, so it doesn't do you any good. And the reason, and if you don't know it's been forgiven, then you're going to go and demand debt from everybody else, like this guy's about to do. But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence. That's like...
$42.
It's not a $42.
It's $44.
$16 at the max. And he laid hands on him, and he took him by the throat, saying, pay me that thou owest. That's what Harry does to Barbara all the time. You're not giving me the right response! And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, have patience with me, and I'll pay thee all. And he would not. but he went and cast him into prison until he should pay the debt. How many people you got in prison tonight, Harry? Huh? So when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry, and they came and told their Lord all that was done. Then his Lord, after that, called unto him, saying, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt because thou desirest me. Should not thou also have had compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And when his Lord was wroth and delivered him to the tormentors till he should pay all that was due him. So likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if you from your hearts forgive not every one his brother their trespasses. Now, by definition, by the blood of Christ, by his contract, you are forgiven. He agreed to take whatever the contract of the law is and much more. You're forgiven. But you don't know it. So because you don't know it, you demand that everybody else pay you their due. You don't know you're forgiven because you didn't know you were in debt. Got it? A little bit. Anybody have any response? Let's get debt free. How about it? Does that sound okay with you, Burnett? Does that kind of sound okay with you, Harry? Paul? All right, that's enough. Take it, big guy.